Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we look ahead to next month's congressional elections in the United States and how they may affect the last 2 years of Barack Obama's presidency.
What are midterm elections about, particularly second-term midterm elections? It's a referendum on the incumbent president. This is a bummer environment for Democrats.
Then we look at how people in Vietnam are using their smartphones to watch videos online. Lots of videos. Congressional elections are less than a month away in the United States. How will they affect President Obama? And how young Vietnamese are increasing their viewing of online videos using their smartphones. Those are our subjects today on As It Is from VOA. Early next month, voters across the United States will choose who represents them in Congress. Voters will select all 435 positions in the House of Representatives. And this year, they will select 33 of 100 senators. The Republican Party currently holds the majority in the House of Representatives. The Democrats hold the majority in the Senate. And a Democrat, Barack Obama, is president. Republican Party leaders say after the elections next month, they will control both the House and the Senate. As our Jonathan Evans reports, if they are right, President Obama will face a difficult final 2 years in office.
Most political experts agree with Republican leaders and say the Republicans will either hold or increase their majority in the House of Representatives. But not everyone is sure Republicans will win the 6 seats the party needs to gain a majority in the Senate. Carlin Bowman is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and an expert on public opinion.
I'm not sure we're going to see a wave. A big wave that would benefit the Republicans. Clearly, they'll pick up a few seats in the House. They will pick up seats in the Senate, but whether it will be enough to get control, I think it's premature.
Some experts believe Republicans have a good chance of taking control of the Senate simply because more Republicans than Democrats vote in midterm elections. John Fortier is a political scientist at the Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington.
Midterm elections tend to be a little bit more of a Republican election. More Republican voters show up. It's a smaller electorate than a presidential election. And for all those reasons, I think the direction will be in the Republican direction. I think the big question is it enough in that direction to get control of the Senate?
Charlie Cook writes about political campaigns. He says some Democratic senators running for re-election are telling voters they no longer strongly support President Obama.
What are midterm elections about, particularly second-term midterm elections? It's a referendum on the incumbent president. I'm going to use a technical political science term here. This is a bummer environment for Democrats.
The election is very important for President Obama, even though he is not on the ballot. If Republicans control both houses of Congress, they likely will not approve legislation he supports. They may also not approve officials he names to government positions, including the Supreme Court. As a result, The final 2 years of Mr. Obama's presidency may be his least successful. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Many Vietnamese are watching videos on the internet. The Nielsen Research Company released a report last week about online video use in Asia. The report says 91% of people in Vietnam who use the internet watch videos online at least once a week. It said more than 80% of internet users in Indonesia, the Philippines, and Thailand watched online videos at least once a week. In Malaysia, it was 67%, and in Singapore, 56%. Nielsen also found that many people in Vietnam use more than one electronic device at the same time. The company talked to people it calls digital consumers, who own more than one device. It found that more people in Vietnam use more than one device at the same time than in any country in the area. It reported 84% of Vietnamese who are online use three devices at the same time. Nielsen said this shows what it calls a growing consumption of online video content in Asia. Nancy Jaffe works for Nielsen in Southeast Asia. In her words, consumers are exercising their choice of how, when, and where they can obtain their content, and are more active in their media habits than ever before. Online videos can be a problem for Vietnam's leaders. The country is ruled by one party. It limits media and the internet. Websites like YouTube and Facebook permit people to post and watch videos that the government might not permit on traditional media. The government recently fined the creators of one online show for failing to ask for permission to make the program. The show is called Apartment 69. It talks about the sexual activities of young Vietnamese. The internet has been good to some media makers. 2 years ago, Huynh Nguyen Dang Qua created a series called My Best Gay Friend. It is considered Vietnam's first comedy centered on homosexuals. Each show in the series received about 1 million views. It brought worldwide attention to the homosexual rights movement in Vietnam. The Nielsen Company says more smartphones and internet service in Vietnam are the main reasons for the increase in online video use. The Nielsen report said 4 times more people used smartphones to get on the internet in the last 3 years. The use of laptop computers for internet access doubled. Nielsen said Vietnamese citizens spend 15.5 hours online for personal use each week. That is the lowest number in the report. People in other countries were online at least 20 hours a week. That's our program for today. I hope it has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz. Please join Jim Tedder tomorrow at this same time for another edition of As It Is, here on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Cameroon is experimenting with Africa's first mobile system to send a cardiac or heart signal over a wireless network. The system will give much-needed medical assistance to heart patients in rural areas. Cameroonian Arthur Zhang invented the device called the CardioPad. He was just 24 years old when he invented it. The CardioPad is a touchscreen medical tablet that enables heart examinations to be performed. The results of the test are sent wirelessly to specialists in other parts of Cameroon who can interpret them. Simplice Momo is a 55-year-old heart patient in a rural area of Cameroon. He says the CardioPad saves him time and money. He says it is too costly and difficult for him to see a heart specialist in the city. Cameroon has a population of about 22 million people, but the country only has 40 heart surgeons. Most are in the cities of Douala or Yaoundé. Sometimes the heart experts needed can only be found outside the country. Apollonia Budzi is a nurse at St. Elizabeth Cardiac Center. She says the device will permit doctors to send patients' medical information to specialists in Europe. Arthur Zhang started the CardioPad project 5 years ago. The young computer engineer said he needed more training and $45,000 to develop the device. His family did not have the money. Banks would not give him loans. So he shared his idea on social media. The president of Cameroon, Paul Biya, answered the appeal with money for the project. Mr. Zhang also received free online training from an engineering school in India. The Cameroon scientific community has recognized the CardioPad as extremely effective. The device cost about $4,000. The government of Cameroon has not been able to provide the device to hospitals in need. Most of them lack internet and enough electricity. But the CardioPad testing at the Bafia Hospital is gaining attention and may get the assistance needed. Mr. Zhang says he has had private investors contact him, but he is more interested in investors who share his vision. That vision is not of money, but of better ways to help improve people's lives. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. The United States has thousands of ghost towns. These are communities that once were successful, but all the population moved to other places. Today on our program, we visit a town in the western state of Arizona that was saved from being a ghost town by a violent history. It is called Tombstone. Come along with us. The town that is now Tombstone, Arizona, was first a mining camp. Silver miner Ed Shefflin named the town. In 1877, Mr. Shefflin was searching for silver in the Arizona Territory. The area at the time was extremely dangerous. Apache Indians considered it to be their land and were all too ready to fight for it. Ed Shefflin used the Army's Camp Huachuca as a base for his search for silver. The soldiers there once asked him why he went out into Apache country every day. He answered, to collect rocks. One soldier then told him, "You keep fooling around out there amongst them Apaches, and the only rock you'll find will be your tombstone." A tombstone is the stone that marks a person's grave in a large burial place. One day, not long after, Ed Shefflin finally did discover valuable silver ore in the area. He decided to call his claim Tombstone because of the soldier's warning. Soon, people heard about his silver discovery and arrived in the area. Others found more silver and established other mines. And they used the name Tombstone for the town they built nearby. The area around Tombstone became well known for its silver mines, and more people came to the town. Some were settlers, storekeepers, and miners, but others were looking for easy money. These were gamblers and thieves who drank too much alcohol and settled their disagreements with their guns. By the end of 1881, the town of Tombstone had a population of more than 5,000. It also had 5 local newspapers, at least 2 theaters, a courthouse, hotels, and many local drinking places. And a gunfight had already taken place that would forever include Tombstone among the famous stories told about the American Wild West.
Okay, correct. Okay, correct. There the outlaw band make their final stand. Okay, correct. Must I lay down my gun and take the chance of losing you forever? Duty calls, my back's against the wall. Have you no kind words to say before I ride away?
It was the gunfight at the OK Corral. The famous gunfight took place on October 26, 1881, between the town's top lawman, or marshal, and his deputies on one side, and an outlaw group called the Cowboys on the other. Stories from people who saw the fight led to newspaper reports, more stories, books, and later movies and television shows. Not all these stories are exactly true. For example, the gunfight did not really take place in the OK Corral, but near it in a field just off a main street in town. Here is one generally accepted story. The town marshal in Tombstone was Virgil Earp. His brothers Wyatt and Morgan also lived in the town. In fact, Wyatt was deputy city marshal, and Morgan had been named as a special policeman. The Earps had a long-standing dispute with the Cowboys. They had tried to arrest group members in the past for crimes such as robbery and murder.
Members of the group included Billy Claiborne, Ike Clanton, Billy Clanton, Tom McLaurie, and Frank McLaurie. On the day of the famous fight, those men were gathered near the OK Corral, an enclosed area used to keep horses and other animals. They were armed in violation of a town ban against carrying guns. They were also drinking alcohol and threatening to kill the Earp brothers. Virgil Earp decided that it was his duty to disarm them. His two brothers and a friend, the gunfighter Doc Holliday, went along to help. The four walked down the street toward the corral. Virgil Earp told the cowboys to surrender their weapons. Billy Claiborne ran away, and the fight began. It did not last long. Historians say 32 shots were fired in the space of about 23 seconds. No one really knows who fired first, but Tom McLaurie, Frank McLaurie, and Billy Clanton died of gunshot wounds. Virgil Earp, Morgan Earp, and Doc Holliday were wounded but survived. Only Ike Clanton and Wyatt Earp were not hurt. A 1993 movie called Tombstone is one of the most recent attempts to tell the story. Listen to its recreation of the famous fight. Sam Elliott is Virgil, Kurt Russell is Wyatt, and Stephen Lang plays Ike Clanton.
We're here to disarm you. Throw up your hands. Oh, not what I want.
Oh, my God.
The Earps and Doc Holliday were arrested for murder and tried in the courthouse. A judge decided they had acted within the law. Wyatt Earp spoke in his own defense at the trial. Here is part of the local newspaper's report of what he said.
I believe then, and I believe now, that these men had formed a conspiracy to murder my brothers Morgan and Virgil and Doc Holliday and myself. I believe I would have been legally and morally justified in shooting any of them on sight, but I did not do so or attempt to do so. I sought no advantage. When I went as deputy marshal to help disarm and arrest them, I went as part of my duty and under the direction of my brother, the marshal. I did not intend to fight unless it became necessary in self-defense and in the performance of official duty. When Billy Clanton and Frank McLaurie drew their pistols, I knew it was a fight for life, and I drew and fired in defense of my own life and the lives of my brothers and Doc Holliday.
Some people still dispute this. They say the Earps and Doc Holliday did not fire in self-defense, but used the law as an excuse for murder. Experts say one of the reasons the gunfight is so interesting to many people is that no one knows who shot first or why. But we do know that the violence between the Earps and the cowboys did not end at the OK Corral. Two more attempts to kill the Earp brothers took place after the famous fight. The first injured Virgil. The second killed Morgan. Wyatt, Doc Holliday, and others decided to hunt down and kill those members of the Cowboys they felt were responsible. Today, the gunfight at the OK Corral brings visitors from all over the world to the small town of Tombstone. The latest information from the Tombstone Chamber of Commerce says the town has a population of almost 1,400 people. More than 50,000 people stopped by the Tombstone Visitors Center in 2013, but the city welcomes thousands more each year. At the OK Corral, actors still recreate the famous gunfight. But other gunfighters are remembered in Tombstone as well. For years, a restaurant called Six Gun City recreated some of the other gunfights that took place in Tombstone. A fire destroyed the restaurant in 2010, but those gunfight reenactments continue. For example, one recreation plays out the gunfight that killed Billy Claiborne, a member of the Cowboys gang who ran from the OK Corral. He was killed by gunfighter Frank Leslie on the main street in Tombstone. In fact, a marker near the spot tells what happened. It says, "Buckskin Frank Leslie killed Billy Claiborne here on November 14th, 1882.
Doc Holliday for
you. Gunfighters and others who died in those early Tombstone years are buried in the local graveyard, Boot Hill. It was named Boot Hill because many of those buried there died, or as the saying goes, with their boots on. Burials there ended after 1884, but the cemetery was restored in the 1930s. Only a few headstones survive, but small metal signs mark the graves. Many simply say unknown, but others include short sayings. One that has been repeated many times says, "Here lies Lester Moore. Four slugs from a 44. No less, no more." People from all over the world visit Tombstone to experience a small part of the old American West. They want to imagine what it would have been like to live in a place like Tombstone. It does not really matter if all the old stories are true or not. The people of Tombstone are only too happy to welcome them to a place known as the Town Too Tough to Die. Our program was written by Nancy Steinbach. Jim Tedder read the newspaper story. And I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for This is America from VOA Learning English.